Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning. Always great to have you with us. I'm Michael Jenkins. She is Chelsea Messenger. We have baseball. Baseball. The more baseball to talk about in our first segment with the postseason in full swing and the Yankees getting the boot. In 620, even more from the diamond as things go bad to worse for Bill Belichick as well in Chapel Hill. We'll get to that in 40 minutes. We bring in Pat Boyle from Infinity Sports Network to help us preview the Giants before tonight's Thursday night football matchup against the Eagles. And we're one step closer to the weekend. That's always a good thing. Chelsea, how are you?
Yeah, good morning. I feel like I say this every day, but it truly is the best time of year. Like yesterday, we had four baseball games on starting at 2 p.m. Central Time. I had a pot roast going, and there was a little chill in the air. I don't know if it's gotten to D.C. yet, but we have finally gotten fall weather here in Tennessee.
I didn't hear anything that you said, except for pot roast. Oh. You got a pot roast to cook it. No. I heard everything, but nothing. Like, I heard you talking, but when you said pot roast, I was like, tell me more about this pot roast. I haven't eaten this morning. I'm hungry. I've lost, like, 4 pounds this week because I've been working so much. I'm ready for a big, hearty meal, preferably one that has been slow roasted.
You got to invest in a crock pot. Or maybe you already have one. You got to start using it. Because I feel like it's great for people who don't want to cook at night. Because, like, I used to be a night person before we worked this damn shift. But now it feels like most of my energy is like in the morning. So I make a pot roast or whatever in the crock pot in the morning. So by the time that I am drained completely empty by 6:30? I don't know what time that time is for you. But like if it's like 6 o'clock, I ain't doing anything productive, including cooking dinner. So I feel like crock pots are great in that regard.
Oh, that sounds great. Dylan put in the chat, my two favorite things are pot and roasts. He nailed it. It's your joke of the day right there. I'm like, oh my God, this guy's already two for two this morning. I could go for a good pot roast. The one thing we don't do is we don't cook much. Like, if we cook in the kitchen, it's a rarity. Every now and then, Catherine will get a wild hair and she'll be like, let's make something tonight. And I'm like, okay, let's do it. But 9 times out of 10, it's just like grabbing something out of the fridge or getting DoorDash. That's the one thing I wish we were better at. I mean, it's not a big deal, but we're just so busy that carving out any sort of time to do that is sort of difficult because if you want to prepare a good meal, it does take time.
Well, not in the crock pot. Like, I'll tell you a little secret about my baked potato soup. You literally cut up potatoes. Okay. You put in chicken. You put in chicken broth. And
that's it?
Yeah. At the very end, you put in like heavy cream and you mix it, and then you put on shredded cheese and bacon at the very end.
Oh, that sounds
like
good.
Do you think you could do that? It's not hard.
Well, when you were listing the ingredients, I was like, if she lists one more, I'm out. When you went to three, I was like, okay, I can do that. I was like, if she's adds like a fourth and fifth, paprika. I'm like, no, okay, now I gotta make this simple. I can do that.
Yeah.
That sounds good. Denton says he had a slow cooker yesterday, a new slow cooker recipe.
It was the worst thing ever.
It was bad?
Oh, it was terrible.
Spill it.
I got it right.
What was it?
We did spill it. I got it from TikTok. It was like this chicken thing, right? So it was supposed to be this like chicken casserole situation, but it was topped with like red lobster biscuit mix.
Oh, my God.
And I saw this thing on TikTok, and I was like, this looks beautiful. And I should have known that this is clearly fake, because I don't know about you, Chelsea. I've never browned anything in a slow cooker. Before.
No.
You brown it in the oven.
Right.
On TikTok, this thing was brown. And I'm like, it looked like it was beautiful. And we tried it. It was, I put 4 chicken breasts in there, 2 cans of cream of chicken, which, full stop, right there. who in God's name has ever needed two cans of cream of chicken for one dish? Not a single person. So right from the jump, I was like, this is not going to go well. I put Greek yogurt in there. I follow the recipe to a T, and nice. Then I did the biscuit mix. And I go, we cook it on high for 3.5 hours. At like the 2 hour mark, I'm like, let me just see, like, is this browning? Like, how are the biscuit topping looking? It's just like completely disintegrated into a blob this point. And I'm like, this is not going to work. But maybe that extra hour is really what's going to take it to the next level. Spoiler alert, it did not. So we went out and got sandwiches instead.
Oh, no.
I looked at my wife and I was like, you go lift that up and see if you want to eat that. She lifted that up and she was like, I'll toss it. And I was like, sick, I'll go get the sandwiches.
Oh, man, that's a bummer. Especially with the biscuits.
And then
mix.
The worst part is that you have to clean the slow cooker, and it looks disgusting.
Oh, no, no, no,
that
no,
is
no.
The worst part of crock pots.
Oh, Chelsea, you got to get on crock pot liners. No, no cleaning.
They stick to the bottom of the pan, do they not?
No. Oh, no. We just popped that bad boy right out, and I was so heavy because there was so much crap in there that it kind of like overflowed a little bit. We just popped that bad boy right out and done. So no cleaning.
Well, that's the one.
Today's show is only crockpot talk.
Crockpot only. Coming up in hour two, crockpot maintenance. Coming up in hour three, easy crockpot recipes for the beginner. Okay, Justin, let's hear about that bet you had in the stove last night that came home.
Yeah, at least Aaron Judge is cooking something up for us. So my theory was that Aaron Judge is the only trustworthy Yankee in the lineup, really. So I had him over his hits, or it was over 1.5 hits plus runs plus RBI, because I also had a sneaking suspicion that they were going to walk him. So I was like, okay, he can score a run off of that. But luckily, he had 2 hits and an RBI, so that was an easy winner. If you're going to lay the blame of the Yankees on something, you know, being eliminated out of the postseason, it ain't Aaron Judge. What a postseason he had, but obviously not enough for the Yankees to stay alive.
Well, 1-2 night for me. Loved the bets. Fortunately, the Tigers came home. Donkster had Cubs on the money line against the Brewers. So for the week, you're 3-1. I'm 3-3. The Donkster 3-0 here on the Daily Tip on BetMGM Network. And we got to get to this Jays-Yankees game because Toronto is moving on. They win 5-2. The Jays plus 155 on the money line. Total set at 8.5. The under hits. Vladdy Jr., George Springer, each drive in a run. And then in the 7th, Nathan Lucas comes up in the clutch.
Yes. Shoots one into center field. He's come through. Clement in to score. Jimenez right behind him. And Nathan Lucas has delivered.
He goes 2-for-5 with 2 RBI. And in a bullpen game for the Jays where they use 8 pitchers, the Jays eliminate the Yankees, advancing to the ALCS for the first time since 2016. They were the ones singing New York, New York after the game. Whew, did not expect the Yankees to go this quietly, but credit to Toronto.
Toronto looked like the better team in the series. Mm-hmm. I think that is the bottom line. Even though I know most of the national talk radio shows are going to be, how did the Yankees lose this? Mm-hmm. Because I will say this, the Yankees are not some piddly little team with some piddly little payroll. They have a bunch of good players on their team. But the Blue Jays, man, those first 2 games really set the tone. And I'll hand it to the Yankees, them staying in this series and fighting back in Game 3 showed a little resiliency, but it was just too little too late. When you surrender 23 runs in your first 2 games, including one of those games where your ace was throwing, and then you have to win one, you know, in a winner-take-all situation, it's just too little too late against a very good Blue Jays team that not only was good the entire regular season, but also peaking at the right time.
Aaron Boone, when asked about his job after the game, he says he expects to keep his job. He's under contract. Do you think he will?
This is a tough one.
Yeah.
Because I don't think this series, like, the blame is at the feet of Aaron Boone. It's just plain and simple, they got out hit. And yeah. I don't think it was a managerial decision. It's just when you get beat this soundly in the first 2 games, I don't know. Like, it's not Aaron Boone that went out there and, like, held Max Fried's arm as he gave up 7 earned runs. That was supposed to be your guy. So I don't know. It's different in New York because everybody is just so impatient, and you didn't even make it to the ALCS, and he was already skating on thin ice. Like, this has been a storyline for the entirety of the postseason. But I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either, but I think your point is well taken, which is, look, Louis Varland started this game for Toronto, and he pitched the day before, and this was, again, a bullpen game for Toronto. Like, this set up perfectly for
for New York to send this series back to Toronto. They had the hitting advantage, at least on paper. They were huge favorites in this game. Just did not matter. Blue Jays, the better team. They are the ones moving on. In the NLDS, the Dodgers may lead the series 2-1, but the Phillies have some life now after winning last night. 8-2 out in L.A. The Phillies plus 150 on the money line. Total set at 7 and a hook. The over hits. And Kyle Schwarber, my God, puts on a show starting in the fourth inning.
Have been a major story. Uh-oh, Schwarber gonna send one way out of here. How far will it fly? My goodness. Kyle Schwarber with a tape measure shot up on top of the pavilion and right. That is one of the biggest bombs you will ever see.
That is not hyperbole. It goes 455 feet, call courtesy of CBS. He is only the second player to hit a ball that far at Dodger Stadium. And he joins Pittsburgh's Willie Stargell, who did it twice in 1969 and 1973. And he had even more in the tank.
A three-run fourth. And now Schwarber, a high towering fly ball. That one is deep. Hernandez will watch it fly. It's another bomb. Kyle Schwarber has done it again. And the Phillies have busted it wide open here in the eighth.
That gives him 23 homers in the playoffs, third most all-time, number one amongst lefties. Trey Turner said about that first home run, it's ridiculous how far that ball went. 117 miles an hour off the bat. This is how you get back in a series.
Absolutely. This is the high-end potential that we expected from the Phillies. And that's why the first two games were such a disappointment from Philly, because they have this great lineup. They have these guys that have a ton of power. And until last night, we didn't see much of that power. It was a power outage. No home runs from, you know, the top three guys, let alone, you know, they can't even get hit. So last night, we finally saw the top of the lineup come alive. We had seven hits across the board for Trey Turner, Kyle Schwarber, and Bryce Harper. And that's what you need from your big-name guys to produce in the biggest situations. And I'll say for the Phillies rotation as well, we talk about managerial decisions. It was certainly a decision to start Aaron Nola, somebody who did not have a great regular season, but they used him almost as an opener in this situation, and he got the job done. Two innings scoreless, three strikeouts, and then hands the ball to Ranger Suarez, who did his job. Five innings, one earned run. It almost felt like a start for him. And then, you know, they didn't even have to use Duran as their closer in this one because the game was so out of hand and they had some run support. So top to bottom, this is what we expected from the Phillies in the postseason. I just wonder if it's too little too late.
I think it might be, but that's what killed me yesterday on this handicap because I had the Dodgers in the first five. And first of all, I mean, Yamamoto has not given up that many runs, you know, in a performance in more than a month, but I did not realize, which I probably should have taken this into account, that Nola was going to be on a quick hook because we were talking yesterday, why isn't Ranger Suarez starting this game? So, you know, when you get to the postseason and you think about making some of these bets, you're going to see decisions that you don't normally see, you know, during the course of the regular season, and this was one of those times. And it's understandable. It's just hard to know exactly how it's going to go down.
Exactly. Like, even looking back at the Blue Jays game, would you have expected the Blue Jays to win a game that was a bullpen game?
Right.
Like, it's one of those weird things where, you know, logic just is not in the picture. But for the Phillies, like, here's the thing about Aaron Nola. Like, he does have good postseason starts in him. And he is the longest tenured Philly, and he's done a bunch of games in the postseason. So he has been there, done that before. It's just, I wasn't sure which Aaron Nola we were going to get because it does feel like it's one thing or the other. It does feel like he's either really dominant and he looks amazing because Trey Turner said this after the game. He said, hey, that's the Aaron Nola that we're used to seeing. Or you have the Aaron Nola that's what we saw during the regular season, which was a guy with a 6 ERA. So it was a gamble, but Rob Thompson won it on that one.
Can we go back to that Schwarbaum, as they call it? I mean, I watched that home run from a few different angles, and man, he just, Yamamoto put a fastball high right down the middle, and as soon as Schwarber saw that, he just turned, and that thing was a monster shot. I think it was Kevin Burkhardt on the call, maybe? I forget who that was on CBS. I think it was Burkhardt. Whoever it was. Like that, when he says, you will hardly ever see a ball hit that hard and that far, like he's not kidding. Only the second player ever to go outside of the park. Just what a moonshot.
Oh, absolutely. And it also broke him out of a slump. Like, that's the other thing. He wasn't hitting at all. Like, I think he was, what, 0 for 8 in this series with a bunch of strikeouts? So it feels like Kyle Schwarber is one of those players that is very streaky. Like, we see the best of him. Like, usually it's in June. Like, June Kyle Schwarber is, like, amazing. But maybe this will start, you know, a great stretch for Kyle Schwarber. Again, it just feels to me like it's too little too late. Because do you think the Dodgers are going to be kept under 3 runs for another game? Just
no.
Doesn't feel like it to me.
Yeah, I don't think so either. And the series price reflects that. Dodgers minus 325. The Phillies plus 260. And more baseball is on the way. Along with this, another report is out. And the Bill Belichick era at North Carolina could already be coming to an end. And that is next on the Daily Tip. It is the Thursday. Come on back.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, it's a Thursday. We're almost there, guys. Thank you for waking up with us here on the Daily Tip on the BetMGM Network. I'm James. She's Chelsea. More baseball coming your way. It's so much fun to have baseball during the week. Man, got the Tigers, Mariners. Tomorrow, that's going to be a great game. We're going to talk about that. The Yankees gone. A lot of storylines that we get to follow. Double D's putting in the chat. Happy Friday, Junior. Okay, we're almost there. It is not a good Friday, Junior, for Bill Belichick. So we've seen these stories start to trickle out, and you never know with anonymous sources, right? Like, you can generate an anonymous source and sort of generate a story if you try hard enough. But now we are seeing story after story after story about how bad things are allegedly getting at North Carolina. So, according to Ollie Connolly, Belichick is discussing buyout options at UNC. A number of UNC coaches and staff members have described communication as, quote, weird and distant over the past few weeks. One coach says it is, quotes, or quote, rats leaving the ship. And now, this always happens when a school wants to get rid of a head coach at a cheaper price. Ollie is also reporting that there is allegedly recruiting violations taking place. So ostensibly, this is to reduce the buyout. Okay, we're gonna make sure we pay you to go your own way, but look at these recruiting violations. Because of these violations, that means we don't want to pay you the full buyout amount. So who knows how many of those are true or not. Regardless, it looks like that Bill Belichick is not long for Chapel Hill, and we're 6 games in.
I don't think this season could have been more of a disaster if they tried, right? Like, I don't think things could go more wrong than they're going right now. And the thing is, if you are looking at these sources and you're like, I don't know if I trust them, it's from all different sources. Like, it's from WREL, which I believe is the CBS affiliate, you know, in Raleigh. It's a TV station. Then you have, like, the 24/7 sports wing, which is, like, Heels 24/7. It's by all of these different people. So it's just, how are all these different journalists getting at the same conclusion? You get what I'm saying? And then we have, like, accounts from parents of members of the team. So it's just too much smoke to believe that there is not fire.
One UNC defensive assistant says this, quote, anonymously, what we've done to these kids is effed up. That's not a good sign. Is this the right move by Carolina? I feel like that it is. This was a fit that did not make sense from the start. initially, we all asked the question, why in the world would Bill Belichick go and coach the college game? He has some college ties because his dad was at Navy for a long time, and he's always had, you know, sort of a soft spot in his heart for the midshipmen. But why would he go to Carolina? What does he need to prove? Why wouldn't he wait for a job in the pros? So that seems strange. And then, of course, he brings along Jordan Hudson, and then that got weird immediately. And then we've heard reports, too, that when Carolina would pony up for different recruits, that they were competing with Group of Five schools. Like, they were going after players who weren't necessarily worth the money that they were handing out. Like, it just seems like every move that they have made outside of marketing this whole thing has been the wrong one, and I think Carolina just needs to cut bait. Sometimes you have to say, we had a lot of great intentions here. We did as much as we could to make this work, but it's not working. So before this turns into a full-fledged train wreck, because it's already going down the tracks, we need to start fresh, and it looks like that's what they're doing.
Yeah, it would be one thing if they were, like, losing close games, and you say, hey, it's his first season.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard for him to compete with the likes of, like, Clemson, because, you know, they're getting a bunch of NIL money. But it's not that, and the culture seems absolutely broken. And it's wild to me now that Bill Belichick's legacy, we're going to have so many, like, what-if questions about,
yeah.
Number one, what if Tom Brady wasn't his quarterback? I don't know if that one's necessarily fair. But now it's, what if he wasn't dating Jordan Hudson? Do you think that this project at Carolina would have been still a disaster if he didn't have all this other nonsense?
Maybe. It's tough because, unfortunately, in any sport, and especially in the NFL, which evolves so quickly, it's hard to stay relevant for a long time, which is a credit to what he did for so long in New England, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the game can pass you by. You can get to the point where you don't evaluate like you used to. You're just not the head coach you used to be. It happens all of the time. And so I certainly don't think the Jordan Hudson thing helped. Like, she was not a benefit to him. At the same time, when we saw the end of his tenure in New England, it looked like this is a guy that maybe needs to sort of have a soft landing in the media, which is what he may do now. But I will say that the number of people coming out and saying that this affects his legacy is something I do not understand. I think it's really obtuse and simple thinking. I know that people will look back and say, okay, at the end of his career, it wasn't great, right? But people really want to lean into the idea that all Bill Belichick did was have Tom Brady as a quarterback. And I think that is monumentally unfair, and I think it undercuts what it means to be a head coach. I mean, I'm sorry to go off here, but when you think about what a head coach doesn't just show up and have a great quarterback. A head coach has to hire great assistants. A head coach has to develop culture. A head coach has to talk with the staff and draft the right people. A head coach has to bring in the right free agents. A head coach, like Bill Belichick, has to coach the defense. A head coach can develop Tom Brady. A head coach has to make in-game decisions. And people just ignore all of that and say, see, you're not good without Tom Brady, ignoring all the other facets of the job. Like, this is not a great end to his career, which it looks to be. It doesn't take away from what he did in New England.
Oh, absolutely not. Like, the guy still has 8 Super Bowl rings, 6 with the Patriots and 2 with the Giants. And mind you, he's a defensive mind. So, like, he's the guy that's behind a lot of these defensive moves for the Patriots. And the thing that's wild to me that people are forgetting is the culture that he created in New England. And that is definitely on the coach. And, you know, to an extent, Tom Brady, I'm sure, helped. But, like, the whole do-your-job thing. And the fact that New England was, you know, a landing place for projects in the NFL, where guys would have, like, these behavioral issues, they would have some potential, they would go to other teams and be terrible, and then they come to New England and they'd be fixed. Like, that is on the head coach, and that's on the culture of the team.
Yeah, and great head coaches, guys who win Super Bowls, often have, you're not going to believe this, great quarterbacks. Look at Andy Reid. Coached in Philly forever. Oh, he can't win the big one. Goes to Kansas City. Gets Patrick Mahomes, boom, he's winning Super Bowls. Look at the Eagles. Knock Jalen Hurts all you want. He was amazing in the Super Bowl last year. Teams would love to have a guy like Jalen Hurts. Look at Tom Brady. Look at the best teams in the league. They have great quarterbacks. That's generally the way it works. You need a great quarterback most of the time to get to the Super Bowl. So I'm not a Bill Belichick defender, but I don't really understand the idea that suddenly he's ruined everything just because the end of his career wasn't great. It's like that for a lot of coaches. It's like that for a lot of players.
Right. Very few people ride yeah. successfully off into the sunset. So it's just one of those things where, like, I think people are just very short-sighted. I think the upsetting part, it's people who should know better who are saying this. Wasn't this like Tony Gonzalez?
Yes.
Somebody play in the NFL and should know better?
Right.
And they said this about Russell Wilson, too, and I think a lot of it was Richard Sherman just being petty. It's just, you guys should know better. Like, you see this up close and personal. It's hard to be successful in the NFL, one. It's hard to be consistently successful in the NFL. And, like, nobody's going to do it for their entirety of their career.
Do you remember when Jerry Rice was playing for the Broncos? Do you remember when Emmitt Smith was playing for the Cardinals? Do you remember when Joe Namath was playing for the Rams? You know what I mean? Like, even the greatest of all time or some of the great players in NFL history going back, they end their careers at places that you forget about. It doesn't mean they didn't accomplish what they accomplished during their careers. So I really don't get it. One thing I do get is that the Tigers saved my card yesterday. Of all teams, by the way. The Tigers, you guys. But they did. They beat the Mariners 9-3. Tigers minus 110 on the money line. Total set at 8.5. The over hits. Mariners on top 3-0 after A.J. Hinch almost made me punch the TV, pulling Casey Mize, who was pitching great in that game. Oh, my God. I was so angry. But they tie the game bottom of the fifth. Then they break it open an inning later.
Five spot real quick. And now two more. Baez! First playoff home run in 8 years has put Detroit on top by four.
Call from FS1, Baez and Riley Green, each with homers to put Detroit on top for good. Tigers tie the series. They win at Comerica Park for the first time in a month, and this was crazy. They score the franchise's most runs in a postseason game since the 1968 World Series. But we get a Game 5, and now the Tigers are the favorites to win this series and the favorites in Game 5 because Tariq Skubal is going to be on the mound.
I still think my biggest question is, what offense are we going to see from the Tigers? Because yesterday was kind of an anomaly, but maybe not an anomaly if you look at the entirety of the season. Because once upon a time, the Tigers were one of the best across-the-board teams in all of baseball. Like, they have good hitters on their staff. You know, they have a good roster in there somewhere. It's just we didn't see it for most of the last month of the regular season and most of the postseason. They've been in a lot of low-scoring games. So I don't know if Tariq Skubal is going to get the run support because, Jenks, to me, Tariq Skubal feels like the constant here. He's going to give you a great start here. I have no doubts about that. The guy's an absolute gamer. He's going to win the Cy Young. But my question is, do you believe in this Tigers offense to give him enough runs?
I don't know. Like, are you going to be stunned if the Mariners win 2-0 or 1-0?
Oh.
You know what I mean? When A.J. Hinch pulled, I just want to say again, when he pulled Casey Mize, I was like, oh, my God. I was so angry. It was a terrible decision. You made such a good point yesterday, which is a lot of these teams, not necessarily the Tigers, but especially the great hitting teams that have a lot of power, that have a lot of guys who can, you know, send it out of yard, generate run production, they can make up for mistakes. And I feel like A.J. Hinch got really lucky yesterday because the Tigers generally don't have a lineup that can get you off the hook like that.
Especially the Tigers. So, yeah, A.J. Hinch owes his team one.
Oh, my God.
Or at least he owes that lineup one. But, again, it does feel like the Tigers are gaining some momentum. And we've counted them out before because, you know, at the end of the regular season, this looked like a team that had already cashed in. They say, okay, you know, the Guardians have our number, whatever. But we have a tie series. So, I mean, anything can happen. And I will say, Tariq Skubal certainly gives them a great, great chance. If I'm him, I'm getting everybody like their favorite meal the night before because the good news is this as well, is that the Mariners and Tigers don't play today.
Yeah.
They play, was it on Saturday? Not today, but the next day. So Skubal's going to get some extra rest as well. And so will the bullpen. So all of the factors are certainly lining up for the Tigers. We'll just see if they can take advantage.
Yeah. I mean, it's all right there for the taking. The Tigers, a minus 140 favorite. Game 5 tomorrow afternoon, 4:40 in Seattle. Looks like George Kirby going to go for the Mariners. Also yesterday, The Cubbies tied with the Brewers 4-3. Cubs minus 120 on the money line, and the over hits with the total set at 7. The Cubs get all they need in the first off of Quinn Priester.
Bush with a drive, right field. Frelick goes back to the track, to the wall, gone! Tie game, Michael Bush, a leadoff bomb once again.
TBS with the highlight. Bush becomes the first player in Major League history with multiple leadoff homers in a single postseason series. He goes 1-for-4 in the day, and he gets some help.
Pete Crow Armstrong delivers with a base hit to right. That'll score 2, and the Cubs have the lead in Game 3.
Once again, call courtesy of TBS. Chicago also escapes a bases-loaded jam in the 8th, and they hold on to that one-run lead. So that's how it ends, and the Cubbies stay alive. I was surprised here. I like the Brewers at plus money, and the fact that they hit up Quinn Priester was something I did not see coming.
Yeah, the only reason I didn't bet on this one is because I feel like Jameson Taillon is at least a veteran pitcher and at least has like some good potential in there. But at the end of the day, the Brewers just didn't hit like they have been hitting as well. But I think my first reaction to this win was like, okay, that's a cute win for the Cubs. But it still feels like a Brewers series to me. Do you feel that way?
Yeah, I feel like we're booping the Cubs on the nose. Do you know what I mean?
Boop.
You guys are so cute. Boop. That was a nice win. Boop. You're not going to win this series. Boop. It's not nice. But I just kind of feel like the Brewers weren't going to sweep everybody, right? You know, it's still right. Baseball. It's still competitive. This is the way it works. And, yeah, I didn't think Priester was going to get hit up, but I feel like the Cubs are kind of on fumes. They're good enough to pull a game here and there, but this still feels like Milwaukee series to me.
Yeah, it still feels like the Cubs just don't have the bullpen depth or even like the starting depth because they have some guys hurt. And again, like they've had to rely so heavily on their bullpen, you know, even dating back to the wild card series, which I guess was not that long ago. But like my point still stands. The fact that the Brewers didn't have to use any of their bullpen because they didn't play in the wild card series. So again, it just feels like the Cubs, like this was a nice morale boosting win, but it's not a lineup I necessarily trust. So we'll see if we'll be on Old Takes Exposed with us laughing and booping them on the nose.
I know.
But hopefully not.
Stupid radio sportscasters boot Cubs who end up advancing over the Brewers. Okay. Boop, boop. It's fun to do, though. Coming up in 5 minutes, time to find out what we expect from the Giants tonight in the Meadowlands. We'll bring in Pat Boyle from Infinity Sports Network. Boop. Next on the Daily Tip.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back on a Thursday, and the Daily Tip on the BetMGM Network. Hope you're having a great morning. Always appreciate your time. Chelsea's here. I'm Jinx. Got D-Day, Double D, and Dylan as well. Legendary show coming up. Jackson Dart looks to get another upset win in the Meadowlands, this time against the rival Eagles. And we will talk to Pat Boyle of the Pat Boyle Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Before we get to Pat, please tell this story that you were reading about regarding Cam Scadamu, which is hilarious.
Okay, so there's this article on ESPN.com about Cam Scadamu and like some of the crazy things that like he does, which, you know, kind of falls on the nose. Like if you ever see him, like just this just feels like his personality. So they talked to his mom and said this. Okay, so it was really hard to keep him in a car seat. We call him Houdini. He also used to put on his brother's shoulder pads and run directly into telephone poles. Like imagine being this kid's mom. That feels like an absolute nightmare, but I will say it has prepared him well for the path ahead.
I mean, sometimes you know what you're going to do, know what you want to do, even as a kid. And this kid knew. He just wants to run into people and run over people. And that's what he's been doing at Arizona State and even now, just flattening people. So that's his game, and he knew early on. So let's talk about this game, and maybe we'll throw in a little Cam Scatterboo talk as well. We bring in our friend Pat Boyle, host of the Pat Boyle Show on the Infinity Sports Network. You can hear him on WFAN and here on the BetMGM Network. Pat, good morning to you. And let's start with the G-Men tonight, hosting the Eagles. What have you seen out of Jackson Dart thus far over a couple games?
Yeah, good morning, guys. And first, I would just like to say for Mrs. Scatterboo, for Cam's mom, you know, you take the millions of dollars he's going to make in the NFL and you deal with the CTE later, right? That's money now, CTE later. I think that's a win for most people. And I take it from me, when my sister's got four boys, they're starting to play football. They run into each other. I think the telephone pole is not far off from their future. But Jackson Dart, look, it's been a mixed bag. He did enough to win in his debut against the Chargers, where he burned them a couple of times with his legs. He had that great 16-yard touchdown run where he bolted right up the middle. And that's kind of how this offense has been designed by Brian Daboll. It's to allow him to use his legs, right? Allow him to be a dual threat. For any NFL rookie, it's going to be tough to throw against defenses. It's going to be tough to go through all the progressions, run the operation, get to the line of scrimmage, recognize blitzes, recognize coverages, and then still make the right throw and put the ball where it needs to be. So he didn't see a ton with his arm, but he made the throws he needed to make against the Chargers and win a football game. And that was awesome. It was a great debut. And then, you know, with that then comes the added expectations, and they go and play the New Orleans Saints, and he turns the ball over three times. You know, he still made a lot of good throws. He actually threw the ball 40 times, which was encouraging to see that many throws, that many completions, 26 of them, and over 200 yards. And with the two touchdown passes, both to his rookie security blanket, not rookie, second-year tight end security blanket, Theo Johnson. But he also turned the ball over three times, which is what you're expecting. So the highs, the lows, it's been a lot of good, it's a lot of bad, and that's probably what you're going to get the rest of the season from Jackson Dart. But I think the future is brighter than it's been in the last couple of years for the Giants, which is definitely a place to start with.
I know that mentality can only get you so far in the NFL, but I will say this. For a team that's kind of, I don't want to call them in the cellar, but like the Giants are not in a great place right now. For a team like that, it almost feels good to have a couple of rookies like Jackson Dart and Cam Scatterboo who just kind of have that energy all the time. And it feels like, I don't want to say like they're too stupid to know that they're like on a bad team, but it just feels like they're young and dumb and they're not going to be affected by, like, you know, the media noise is saying, oh, the Giants are losing again. Do you think they've injected new life into this team?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, absolutely, right? It's like, I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, they're too dumb to know how bad of a team they're on. So just like Malik Nabers, I mean, you see Malik Nabers, it kind of felt like within a year, he kind of has that grizzled veteran look about him. Like, wow, yeah, this team does suck no matter how great I am. And then, a terrible torn ACL ends his season. Like, I was incredibly excited to watch Jackson Dart throw the football to Malik Nabers and Theo Johnson and have Cam Scatterboo run it. You take Malik out of this offense, and it's just not going to be anywhere near as good as it could have been. So that's really frustrating. But I do think that these guys, they've brought some physicality to this Giants offense. Scatterboo, he's the human bowling ball. That story about him running in a telephone pole completely checks out. And Dart's not afraid to run people over either. So, yeah, I think it brings some physicality to this Giants offense, and it definitely brings some youth and some spark. I mean, if nothing else, it brings it to Brian Daboll, who knows maybe now his job could be extended by another year. That's for sure.
That was my next question, Pat, which is how hot is that seat and how much does he need to win for the rest of the season to stay in that role?
Yeah, I mean, it's still pretty hot. I don't think it's as hot as it was after week three. Then he makes the change to go to Jackson Dart. And look, I mean, who knows? He should have been fired after last season. Joe Shane should have been fired after last season. It should have been a holy triumvirate. It should have been a new GM with a new head coach and a new quarterback. And so now you run the risk of putting the quarterback in a lame duck situation with a quarterback and a new GM that didn't draft him if things do go haywire. So John Mara basically was too lazy, and I say that in, like, he said it himself, he was too lazy to fire Brian Daboll and Joe Shane. He was like, yeah, I don't want to have to go through the process again. Okay, yeah, it's only your job as the owner, but then he doesn't really give a playoff mandate, just said he hopes he feels a hell of a lot better than what he does right now. So it's really tough to gauge, like, what, how many wins do the Giants have to get? If they get 3 wins, if they beat the Colts and score 45 in a meaningless Week 17 game, does that save Brian Daboll's job again? I think you need to see enough progression and enough enough building from Jackson Dart. I think, honestly, the defense can look as bad as it's been. They'll fire Shane Bowen, the defense coordinator, after the season. He's a stiff. He's got no idea what he's doing. As long as Jackson Dart progresses and looks better and better by the end of the season, I think that's enough to keep Brian Daboll and Joe Shane their jobs, because you can then make the argument to the owner, John Mara, hey, we hit on our quarterback. We've got our guy. Our number one receiver tore his ACL three games into the season. We're going to get him back. Just look how much better we're going to be next year. And so it seems like it's hot on the surface, but as long as Dart gets a little bit better as the year goes on, the Giants could win 4 games, and I think Brian Daboll will be back.
All right, so let's talk about the now. We have a big game tonight, divisional matchup, Eagles and Giants. Giants getting 7.5 at home. What's the game breakdown here? What are the key matchups, and can the Giants keep it close?
Yeah, I mean, at the expense of looking like an idiot, I was big on the Rams last week. I didn't think Mac Jones would, with a banged-up PCL, throw for over 300 yards, and Kendrick Bourne would have the game of his freaking life, and also that Kyron Williams would fumble on the one-yard line. Not that the Rams were going to cover anyway. So at the expense of looking like an idiot, like a lot of Rams bettors did last week, it's another divisional game on a short week. And I still feel like this is the get-right game for the Eagles. I still feel like they win this game comfortably. They've dominated this series historically. You know, with the Niners and the Rams, over the last year and a half, McVay had Shanahan's number, but for a long time, Shanahan owned McVay. And so in hindsight, it wasn't that surprising. To me, this would be a big surprise if the Giants win this game tonight. And I know the 7.5, the 7 and the hook is appealing for a lot of folks. Like, hey, you know, look what the Patriots did. Look what the Niners did. The Giants can keep this within a touchdown. The Eagles, it's all dysfunction. They look broken. You got A.J. Brown and Jalen Hurts and Saquon having private meetings, and they can't run the ball, and they can't throw the ball. To me, this feels like the get-right game, because what's the Giants' big strength? It's their pass rush. Well, I'm pretty confident the Eagles can neutralize that with their great offensive line. Landon Dickerson, he's ruled out, but the rest of the offensive line is good to go. And even though they don't look, you know, unbeatable like they did last year, this Eagles offensive line, they're still elite. And so that's how you neutralize a good pass rush, is with a great offensive line. That the Giants still can't stop the run. And you add in now the narrative angle. Saquon coming back to MetLife again. He ran for a $176 against them at MetLife last year. I still think Saquon's got that bitterness in him of like, I'm going to show you again what you missed out on. I tried to stay here. You let me go. And now I'm going to run for another 150 yards down your throat. It just feels like all the problems the Eagles have been having. It's a Giants secondary, again, that has a lot of issues right now. Guys, you know, rookies last year, Phillips and Newbin, have taken a step back this year. They still have a big-time issue covering number one receivers. So if there's a game where it's Saquon runs for big yards and A.J. Brown maybe doesn't have a lot of yards or a lot of receiving, a lot of catches, but A.J. Brown probably finds a way to get into the end zone. It just feels like it's a get-right game for the Eagles, and their defense is still very good. You know, they held the Broncos to 3 points until the final 10 minutes of that game, and then they got caught out of nowhere. So, it's anything can happen, short week divisional game, but to me, this feels like it's a get-right game for the Eagles. I think they win it by 10 or more.
He is host of the Pat Boyle Show on the Infinity Sports Network. You can also hear him on WFAN and here on the BetMGM Network. Pat, we appreciate the time, and good luck to your sister's kids. We got to keep them away from those telephone poles.
Yeah, absolutely. Really quickly, too, some props if you guys want to hear
them. Yeah, go ahead.
Speaking of Theo Johnson, 6 catches on Sunday against the Saints, 3 in Jackson Dart's debut against the Chargers. The one Eagles weakness is they do give up a lot of catches to tight ends. So let's go Theo Johnson over 3.5 catches. No Malik Nabers, no Darius Slayton in this game either for the Giants. Who's that security blanket? It's Jackson Dart's tight end, over 3.5 catches for Theo Johnson. And let's take Cam Scataboo anytime touchdown, right? Plus 155.
Yeah.
If somebody's going to get in for the Giants, it's either going to be him or Dart. Why not just, you know, the human bowling ball running back who they're going to run it with? And then I think Saquon, you can push that narrative tonight. Saquon over rushing yards and maybe break out the ladder with it here. I think he has another massive game against him.
Oh, love that. Cam Scataboo running into the end zone and then runs right to the goalpost and starts banging his head against the stanchion. And that could be his touchdown celebration. Thank you, Pat. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
That would be amazing. That's his thing. Like, every time he gets in the end zone, just bam, bam, bam. Human wrecking ball. I would love that.
Until he gets a call from Roger Goodell, and he's like, hey, listen, hey, we're trying to crack down on CT. Can you please not do that? Thanks.
Right. You're not helping this, okay, at all. Please, stop. Coming next in the show, we will focus more on the game tonight. Prop bets we like. You know, Chelsea's going to have a ton of those, and I'll sit back and say, yeah, I like those too. I like those too. Eagles and Giants coming up on tap next on the Daily Tip on the BetMGM Network.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.